As a homeowner, I can't help myself. I'm always thinking about fixing this and changing that. For the money, for the beauty, for the knowledge and the peace of mind. It's about time for the Love My Renovation Project with Mike Young.
Hey, welcome to Love My Renovation Project with Mike Young. We're going to discuss things about regarding renovation projects with either the FHA 203K or the home style renovation mortgage primarily. There's a bunch of other ones out there. I think there's about 9 or 10 that we counted the other day. In any case, if you'd like to be part of our show today, you can call in at 888-627-6008 toll free and ask your renovation questions. And while most 203Ks go off without a hitch, from time to time you'll find yourself with no one to talk to and everything going wrong on your project that you can imagine. And just there's just nobody sympathetic to your needs. A lot of you try to talk to your consultant or your inspector, but they are not your advocate. If you can, talk to us at 203k911.com, and we can help advocate for you. But don't look for your inspectors to advocate or be your advocate, because they're not. Well, it looks like about 1 in 100 is a pain in the butt. But if you are doing 203Ks on a regular basis and you have a problem one early in your career, don't worry about it. They are not that often. They're not that frequent that you have a problem. If you've got a topic you'd like to discuss in more specific terms and you don't want to be on the radio to do it, then go to one of our websites and send us a message. You can go to 203k911.com, go down to the message link and send us an email right from there. And we'll be happy to talk to you one-on-one, and there's no charge for that initial talk. May not be a charge at all for whatever your problem is. We've been able to help hundreds and hundreds of people without a charge at all, because their problems turned out to be so minor. In many cases, it's just a matter of getting that communication opened up again with your contractor. So if you're having problems, you need someone to talk to, feel free to give us a call. This week, we had some calls come in, some homeowner calls, contractors, a little bit of everything this week. But I had a consultant contact us the other day, and he said, is it okay for my client to pay out of pocket for work that can be reimbursed through a draw along with the contractor's reimbursement? Now, I've never had that asked before. He wants to avoid, that's his comment. He's never had that happen before. He wants to avoid doing a change order because that would cost him to write that change order up. But he just wants the consultant slash inspector to just take care of that for me, you know, no cost. I don't want to pay you for your efforts. The lender will not pay a homeowner directly for anything out of their for labor on any changes or anything like that. But if the borrower is paid for the contractor separately outside the scope and wants to be reimbursed, then it has to be a change order. That's the guideline. So a change order must be written up and it must be paid. And then likely that check's going to come made to the borrower and the contractor. And it's going to be up to the contractor to sign that check over to the borrower. Or if it comes with his draw inspection check or his draw check, they may actually have to rely on the contractor to pay him his portion of that back. In any case, this is a common occurrence. We see it all the time. I have one right now that's sitting on 1 year and 3 months. It was a 3-month project at most. Contractor's frustrated. The borrower and the contractor having conflicts now and have had now for about 8 months. But when we went out to do the first draw, the borrower had contracted for the contractor to pay to completely renovate their kitchen along with all the other renovations that we were doing. So, of course, that's going to get in the way of everything we're doing. He had to remove an extra wall that wasn't in our scope of work. So it becomes problematic when the homeowner wants to do other work outside the scope of work with the same contractor. And you cannot do it with another contractor because no two contractors want to be on the job at the same time for liability purposes or concerns. So if the borrower, in my case, had actually taken that extra money that they were going to be doing the additional work with and put it as a additional down payment, they might have qualified for a home style loan with 20% down and saved the PMI. In her case, it's about $500, a little over $500 a month PMI. Saved that. It's been a year now, so 5 times 12, that's $6,000 she could have saved. But she didn't because she wanted to do this thing on her own. Now, she has moved into the house, even though it wasn't finished. And that makes it more difficult for the contractor to work around all of her things. I have no idea what's going on there anymore. She's pretty much made it clear she doesn't want any intervention by the bank. The bank really controls that. I told them you can call for a draw, but they don't have to wait for the contractor to call for it or the homeowner. So anyway, about twice a month, we get asked the same question. And if they did it right, they could apply that additional down payment and call it contingency reserve. That way, if it's not used or needed during the current construction phases, then they get it returned back to them. So it's not part of the loan, actually, because it gets returned to them. When you put up the contingency reserve in cash, you can get it back at the end in a check. All right, so what else do we have this week? The borrower has a, let me see, contingency reserve. That. What is the FHA property standard regarding a floor furnace? Now, if anybody wants to go to a blog, you can actually see the pictures that I'm going to be discussing, talking about shortly. If you go on a Google search and type in Active Rain, Mike Young blog, Mike Young 203K blog, it'll write up. And the latest blog post I did was this very one, so that we could have some pictures out there. Wanted, but we get a lot of questions about floor furnaces. I have a house with a floor furnace. We keep it or must it be replaced by another type of furnace? Well, the following information is true whether it's an FHA 203B or a 203K, limited or a standard. A floor furnace, forever has been a misunderstood issue for a long time. Anyway, as I remember, the simple test that I've always used for determine if it must go or if it can stay is, does it exist in a walkway or not? I know that my grandparents had a floor furnace that was between the living room and dining room, and there was a very wide archway, a big wide opening there, approximately 7 feet wide, 6 feet wide, and the furnace was all the way to one side, right in the middle of that doorway. There was no doors, so it's not going to be burning a door house down. But you could easily walk from the living room straight to the dining room and then the kitchen without having to walk around that floor furnace. So that floor furnace would have been fine under the FHA guideline because it's not in a walkway. But if you're on my blog and you're looking at these pictures, the first one is a wall/floor furnace. So it's built close to the wall. It does stick out under the floor a little bit, maybe a foot or 8 inches to a foot. But mostly it goes up the wall. And that is fine because you can walk down the hall behind it in the photograph there and not step on it. Now, this is not to walk around it. You would naturally not step on it. It's hot and you're not dodging it or anything. There's plenty of room there to walk around it. The next one was an interesting one we had in San Francisco, and the lady wanted a 203K to create a parking spot. As you can well imagine, in San Francisco and all those hills and everything, that she never had a garage. So she wanted to go ahead and get rid of one of her bedrooms in favor of a garage so she could put a driveway in and had all that approved. The blueprints are drawn up. But when we came into her house to do the inspection, she was a little frustrated because I don't want to do anything in the house. And I said, well, yeah, we have to make sure the house is safe otherwise. And this furnace is right smack in the middle of the hallway. There is no way you can step around it unless you jump over it, one corner of it, and then jump over another corner to get back into the hallway. So it really needed to be fixed, needed to be changed. Her argument was that I grew up in this house. That furnace has always been there, and it's never been a problem. We rarely use it anyway. But I don't want to change it under the 203K. Well, there's several ways that we could have changed it. One, we could have put in a wall furnace somewhere, or we could have used it as a return air on a forced air system. But she didn't want to go through that expense. She just wanted a garage. It ended up killing this deal. All right, so she had to have that. It was a safety issue. So you can't just leave it in the middle of the hallway. I did contact HUD Engineering and ask them if we could get a waiver on that because she's lived there since she was a child. She grew up in that house. This is not a problem for her. And they said, absolutely not. Okay, so we did make the attempt, and it was not able to do that. The next one we had was a very interesting one. It was a 203B appraisal we were doing. We had called the furnace to be removed because you walked from a kitchen into a hallway, and as you did, the furnace was right there, and it took the entire width of the door, and then you could either go right and down a hallway or left into a bedroom. Either way, you had to step on that floor furnace, so it had to go. It could not, does not fit minimum property standards. So on that case, went out there to do, they called me to say that the work is finished, the furnace is gone. We've installed another furnace elsewhere in the house. Actually, their plan was to use that as a return air and then throw a forced air system in, which they said was all in and functional. So when I get there, they guessed it was right in the walkway. It wasn't changed. It was still there. Tools were all over the place where they're obvious it was, they're still working on it. And the comment was, it'll be done by the end of the day, Mike. Just sign it off so we can get the loan papers closed by the end of the day. And I can't tell you strongly enough, if you're a new consultant out there or if you're an appraiser doing a 442 inspection, you cannot sign this stuff off if it isn't done. If it isn't done, don't sign it off. We had one guy where one of my employees went out to do a draw on their project, and the realtor indicated, well, if Mike was coming out here for this, he would sign it off. And that employee came back to the office and said, is this true? Would you really do that? And I said, absolutely not. And I got that realtor on the line, and he says, I know, I was just doing whatever I could to try to get it signed off. I said, whatever you could became a lie. And what you said to my guy, you know, you questioned my authority and my telling them don't sign anything off that isn't done. And that's why he's standing right here, and I'm telling you on the phone here, don't do that to me again. If, in fact, I am a friend like you told him, then don't ask me as a friend to sign something off that isn't done. It isn't going to happen. HUD has a zero tolerance policy for signing things off that you know aren't done. So, you know, it just can't be done, and I don't recommend that anybody do that. Anyway, today is just going by fast, fast, fast. So if you want to be part of the show, call us at 888-627-6008 and be part of the show. In the meantime, we'll be right back after this short break, so stay tuned.
.com. If you're having issues with your renovation project, we may be able to assist you. It's nice to know you have a knowledgeable person on your side. We recently had a client that had a lender telling them that the problem wasn't theirs, but it was the correspondent lender's. Ultimately, they agreed it was their problem and remedied the issue quickly. Most issues have been handled without a fee. Visit 203k911.com now and let's fix your problems.
Hey, we're back with you. This is Mike Young. If you want to be part of the show, call in at 888-627-6008. We'd love to have your comments and discussion. It makes the program much more interesting than listening to me all day, every day, every week. Anyway, back to the floor furnace conversation. If you're looking at my blog and you're seeing these pictures, the next floor furnace is very narrow. It's next to the wall. It's in a hallway. But as you step from the one room into this hallway, it's clearly, because it's long, you could probably step in there with your right foot and miss it. But when you put your left foot down, it's going to hit that floor furnace. Therefore, it is not meeting the minimum property standards. So if you can't walk down that hallway in a natural walk, not purposely avoiding this thing, but just walking down that hallway in a natural walk and not step on it, then in fact it must be changed out. It's not meeting HUD's minimum property standards. Now that same furnace, or one very close to it, is in the next picture. So here we have it. It's no wider than the hamper that's sitting next to it. And there's plenty of room to walk past it in the hallway. So either this hallway is a little wider than the previous one. But in any case, this doesn't stick out any farther than the hamper. And you can walk down this hallway in a natural walk without stepping on it. In fact, this one, if you're looking at the picture, is a brand new furnace that was just added to that house in Berkeley upon Keith. Boy, our client bought a house there and got it at a sale price. Person before him just bought it as a fixer back when this is when investors were allowed to purchase 203Ks. He thought he'd fix it up and sell it. So you can tell that's been a while back, probably 1998-ish. But he tried to fix it up and he put a foundation, a perimeter foundation, but he just did a facade. It really wasn't done properly. And immediately the house twisted and broke all of his concrete up, and the man thought it was haunted. The house was haunted. That was a interesting experience. It turns out that it's a river, underground stream, that flows under the houses all along Keith Avenue in Berkeley. It's on a hillside, and every time anybody disrupts that flow of that creek, every house on that side twists a little bit. We may put that up as a blog post in the next few days, just so you can see how much that house twisted and tweaked. They had for years been, as the house twisted, the pier and posts under the house would start to lean. And instead of fixing them or moving them, they just added additional piers to catch it. When it finally leans over a little bit further, it'll be on the new piers. It was scary to be under that house in the first place, but it was almost comical to see the way they had didn't try to fix the problem at all, didn't address the problem. We ended up, our client bought this house from that investor, and we put in six grade beams. In other words, we drilled the engineer ended up with six 24-inch round holes that we dug just outside the house perimeter, two in the front, two in the middle, and two at the rear of the house. And then he built a grade beam across, so we filled those things with concrete and steel, and we had to drill down until we got below that stream. Yes, it was a mess. and then they cased it, and then they filled it with concrete, and then put the grade beam across, tying them all together, and set the house back down on that grade beam, on those three grade beams. Never had another bit of problem with it, to my knowledge. So that's where we are. Now, looking at floor furnaces, that's about it. If you can walk past it without stepping around it, if you could just walk past in a natural walk, that was a gauge that I always used and taught my appraisers and consultants how to look. So now we're going to pick up from where we left off last week. We were talking about consultant duties, you know, what you get for your money. We talked about the most consultants today are leaving out and violating the guideline by not putting in a inspection report. Now, this is a written report that you have to put in there, and we discussed it last week, so you can go to last week's podcast if you need to hear more about that. The second thing is that where we find consultants failing right now miserably is there's many consultants that won't even go out to a job unless they hear or take a contractor with them, because they want that contractor's bid in their hands before they write their scope of work. That is a violation of your consultant's duties. All right. Another place, let's see, the scope of work is supposed to be created by the consultant with the borrower's help. All right, the assistance of the borrower. This would include any health and safety issues that you saw when you were out there. And then bid the job. Your job is to bid that job independent of a contractor bidding the job. Now, if you don't know how to bid and you want to learn how, we're happy to teach consultants how to bid jobs. Take one of our training courses and you'll learn it very, very fast and very simply. And you won't be in violation anymore. So if you're out the consultant, if you're the consultant and you get out to the job, you are to work with the client, create the scope of work. You're going to, you're supposed to put in the client's wish list, add items that you find don't currently meet the minimum property standards, and then bid the job. This does not require you to wait for a contractor's bid, because you're supposed to create an independent bid without regard to the contractor's bid. That way, the homeowner is given the best service possible. You have a bid in your hand. We did a bid not too long ago. I bid, they had an engineering contractor's bid at $136,000 to replace a foundation. I bid the job at about $75,000, $79,000, something like that, with another engineering contractor who got his bid together and confirmed that my bid was good by giving us his independent bid, and it found it was in within $4,000 of our bid. I think one of us was $75,000 and one was $79,000. So we had a good bid. Then the termite guy got in the way and said to the homeowner, "Hey, I can fix that foundation for $50,000. And the homeowner chose him to do the job. No, no, no. I would never have chosen that termite guy because he's not a licensed general contractor. He can't do all the other work that needed to be done. He can only do termite repairs and dry rot and so forth." Turned out to be a bad idea. The guy had dementia, I think, and wouldn't show up to the job. And all of a sudden, the homeowner would call him, and he says, "Who are you again?" I mean, it was terrible. Anyway, but I know a couple of consultants that won't even do the job without a contractor beside them. I know some was busted a long time ago for doing just that. Turns out that he had given 100% of his project construction to that one contractor. If I may make a suggestion and do what we do in our practice, is that no contractor can ever have more than 10% of our business at any one time. This keeps you from being too familiar with a contractor and dependent on that contractor to do your job. You need to do your job and not depend on some contractor to do it for you. When we put a bid out there and give the homeowner the prices, let's say we bid the job at $80,000 to do a particular job, a scope of work, Then we drop the prices out of that, and we send that off to the contractor or contractors to bid, put their numbers in those slots. Quite often a contractor's bid is, I'll fix this house for $80,000, or I'll fix this house for $75,000, and they don't give you any detail. And the reason they don't is if you get two bids or three bids from three different contractors, and you have our bid, that's very unusual, because most contractors won't bid if they find out there's more than one other contractor bidding. But the fun thing is that their bid comes in 5% high or low. It's all or nothing bid. Homeowners say, well, this contractor's got good prices on the first half of the scope, and this guy's over here has got good prices on the second half of the scope. Why don't we just let them do what they're lowest on? Well, that's a good way to get nobody to bid your project. These bids are all or nothing at all. So we don't want to just try to subvert that thing. Contractors are not going to get on the job at the same time. You're allowed one general contractor. Now, he might sub it out to another contractor, but you got to be careful. You can make one wrong mistake and not have any contractors bidding your job. That could be the worst scenario. Let's see, where are we? Even if I've had several contractors tell me that they're so happy to be doing so much of our business, and they didn't realize they're only getting 10% of our business. So 10% of our business is still substantial business for any one contractor. And you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket ever with doing business with one contractor over and over. I think on our list the other day, I counted almost 600 contractors that do work for us around the country. And we have our favorites, yes, like anybody does, and I'll let them bid on some of these jobs. But if they're at 10% of our volume, 10% of our number of jobs, then we may not let them bid on a job or two until they get something finished. We found over the years that if a contractor's got a dozen projects going with us, that we have more leverage. We have more leverage over him on the next project. So we want to keep them happy at the same time, want to get them paid as soon as possible, get their draws done in a timely fashion. And if we do that, then the contractors will continue to want to work with us. And that's our goal. So anyway, we are up against the clock again. Please call us at 888-627-6008 if you want to be part of the show. And we'll be right back after another short break.
Thinking of becoming a 203K consultant? Contact us to see if you qualify. Home inspectors, contractors, architects, and engineers most likely qualify. Create an additional profit center using your existing knowledge base. For more information, visit 203ksoftware.com, and you'll be glad you did.
Hey, this is Mike Young. Welcome back. Again, if you want to be part of the show, call us at 888-627-6008. We were talking about consultants and their duties. Now we're going to switch over and switch gears a little bit and talk about marketing your 203K services. Marketing is a special commodity in this business. You can't just call lenders and expect to get them to give you the business, and you can't. You certainly can't just get added to the HUD list as a consultant and expect to get a lot of business. It's just not going to happen. HUD has a very sloppily done website as far as consultant list. They list you in the county or the city and state that you live in or do your business, whatever you give them as your address. Lordy, lordy, lordy. That means I'm listed in Fairfield, California. Well, don't tell anybody, but I live in Las Vegas. But Fairfield is a bigger market for the Bay Area. But if I got all the business in Fairfield, all of it, 100% of it, all the time, it wouldn't be enough to live on. So I've got a friend that lives in, one of our associates lives in a suburb of Columbia, South Carolina. He has a mailbox in Columbia because Columbia is a much larger city than his little town. I think his town has 25 people in it. I'm teasing. I'm just teasing. I know he's listening. I know you probably got 500 people there, maybe 2,500. But in any case, it's a lot less than Columbia, South Carolina. So I think that was a good move. You get more calls from Columbia. Anyway, in 1998, I had a HUD representative. They called for a meeting of all the consultants in the San Francisco Bay Area, and there's 40 of them. And I could tell when they first started that this wasn't going to be a good for Mike Young, because I always sit in the front because I have a hearing deficiency, and I can't hear more than one person at a time. So I sit in the close in the front so I can read lips a little bit and hear the speaker. And they started in the back. Since I was in the front, they said, introduce yourself, tell us how many 203Ks you did past year, and so forth. And, of course, San Francisco that year did probably, I think, 200 or 250. The guy that I did a lot of marketing with did 175, and I did 175. That's 350. So that's 100 more than San Francisco HUD did. And, of course, when they started getting that information, I'm Bill and I didn't do any last year. I'm John and I didn't do any last year, but I'm hoping to do my first one this year. Then as it got closer and closer to us, it started getting to all my W-2 employees, and they were saying that I did 25 last year, I did 50, I did 75. So we did a lot. And then when we announced that we had done 350 between me and one other guy, just the two of us, somebody in the back said, yeah, that's more than these HUD even did, you liars. One thing that we were told when I was growing up is a liar is the worst thing you could be. So liars we're not. And I straightened it up real quick when I asked the HUD if I could address the group with answering his question of, why am I a hog? He asked me, why do you hog all the business? Why do you and your group here hog all the business? So I stood up and first thing I did was address the people. You know, he didn't say how many 203Ks did you do in San Francisco's jurisdiction. I said, I do them in 203Ks in Sacramento jurisdiction and Fresno jurisdiction as well as San Francisco. So for all you naysayers that say there's no work out there, there's as much work out there as you want. Then I faced the man from HUD and I asked everybody behind me that I've never reached out and called and made a call to you. If you never got a call from me, stand up. And I asked the man from HUD, Jim, how many people are standing up behind me? And he looked around me and he says, well, doesn't look like anybody. And I said, that conversation went like this. Our marketing program is so phenomenal that I'm willing to share it. All you have to do is come out to one of my seminars, see what it is we're doing. And if you like it, fine. If you don't like it, fine. Either way, I'm going to send you home with a consultation to do closer to your home. So you're going to get a free job just for coming out and spending 2 hours and learning how I get all this work. And then if you like it, I'm going to come to your office and give that same seminar for you for free. And all the jobs we generate in your neighborhood would be for you. And I looked at HUD and I said, does that really sound like a hog? He says, why, no, it doesn't. I didn't know you did all that. And I said, no, and you weren't going to ask me privately. You tried to embarrass me. And what you actually did was embarrass out of the 40 consultants in this room, 15 are W-2 employees because they chose to work in my office on my computers. The rest of them, the other 25, you embarrassed them, not me. because they're too lazy to come out and get free work. And he said, oh my. And those naysayers said, oh my, he did offer us free work just for coming over there. But they're not willing to invest 2 hours one time and then take me up on my offer. In those days, I had 39 appraisers and 15 W-2 employees that were consultants. HUD gave us permission to do the consulting and the appraising on a project. I felt that was a conflict. The guideline clearly states that it's a conflict, but HUD said as long as Mike Young is not doing either the consultation or the appraisal, then you're okay to do it both. But we just never did. I could give away, we didn't care which part of the puzzle we got. We didn't care if we got the consulting or the appraising. I didn't need both of them. The way the HUD designed the 203K, in my opinion, was a way to spread the wealth, to let everybody get a little piece of whatever's going on. And as long as I got a piece of the project, why, I didn't have any complaint. And I enjoy standing in front of a group and giving that seminar. I really do. I find it exhilarating to be able to put deals together in that room. And that's the way we do it different. The same seminar I give is probably the same one is given by thousands of people every week around the nation. Holy smokes. Why is mine more effective? It's very simple. It's because we bring all the pieces of the puzzle into the room and we put them together in the room. I think last week we talked a little bit about Norwest Mortgage, who no longer exists, but they had put 600 realtors in a room. That's 600 pieces, the same piece of puzzle. It's the realtors. They didn't have any borrowers. They didn't have any investors. They didn't have, I said investors. You can have investors that sell their houses to 203B buyers all the time. Okay, so don't rule out investors. We make sure that we get the next deal on an investor with a home style loan. As by helping him get rid of his property before he has it fixed so he has no carrying costs or reduced his carrying costs. You know, recently I needed a consultant in another state, and none of our graduates of our training were available close to this property, and there were several in that same town. So I contacted them, and they weren't aware they had to create a scope of work. And after, you know, we turn these things in about 4 days after we see them, sometimes a little less, sometimes a day longer. But we got our scope of work, and it's out to bid. And this guy was sitting on 2 weeks, and the lender called me and says, hey, is that guy going to get this done? We don't even have a scope yet. So I contacted him, and he said, well, I don't have a contractor's bid. I said, no. That would be a blatant disregard for the guideline. It's your job to create the scope of work. What does he need to do so that the contractor can then bid that scope of work? It's also your job to bid that job. He did not know that. Hello? He needs to read the guideline. You know, he swears he did read it. When you certify, you read it. When you got your application into HUD to become a consultant, you were awarded that. They anointed you with that consultant qualification, and you didn't even read the guideline. A lot of them don't know how to put a bid together. So my friends at Home Tech Services, they have had a, what do they call this thing? They call it the Remodeling and Renovation Cost Estimator. I read it right off the back of the book here. I got a couple of them sitting on my desk, one for Las Vegas and one for areas in California, San Francisco Bay Area, I believe. Anyway, if you get a hold of hometechpublishing.com and then look for that remodeling and renovation cost estimator, and you want to buy one of these books or a series of them or programs to do the costing for you, you can do all that. And if you put in my team on your checkout, your discount code is my team, all capital letters, you'll get a discount. They've given any of our people that use that my team, all caps, in the checkout window, they will get a 20% discount which is about $30 on one book. So if you're buying an $800 project, you're going to get $160 off. So it's worth using the My Team code, okay? If you're not pricing your projects, you're not a consultant. If you're not pricing your projects, you're violating the guideline. You could be removed or sanctioned from the list. Sanction is usually about 6 months. They take you off the list, and then you have to prove that you now know how to do this bid that you couldn't do before. So it's better to do it right the first time than it is to get caught doing it wrong and have to pay the penalty. Not dollars, but time consuming. I guess that if HUD were to provide a test today, maybe 30% might pass. I could be wrong. Nah, I'm probably not. Years ago, several of us older consultants that have been around a long time decided to share our work write-ups with each other. I think there was 7 or 8 of us. I don't think there was 10. But 7 or 8 of us just exchanged our 203K work write-ups. And there was no surprises there, except 2 of the guys didn't bid a job. They never bid a job. They waited for a contractor to come in and bid the job. And then they just, or if they got an order, they would tell the people, go ahead, you get it. Find a contractor, have them bid the job, send me the bid, and I'll write, do the write-up for you. Why is he getting paid the same that we are? That would be my question. We go that extra length and do it right. We bid the project so you have some forewarning. The borrower knows exactly what it's going to cost for his project prior to sending it out to bid. You know, that's powerful. Homeowners typically don't buy a house or renovate a house every day. And typically we do, almost every day of the year. So when we do that, you get pretty good at what you're doing, and you can look at these things and you can bid them so that the homeowner has that extra, comfort zone, or that extra comfort in knowing that this job should be about $80,000 or $250,000, whatever it is. But now when the bids come in, now we start working it a little bit. So let's say that I bid a job at $80,000 and contractor one comes in and he's at $85,000. That's a good bid. Okay. He's right at there, almost 5-6% over my bid, but he's still a good bid. And it reflects his locality, his costs. And, you know, right now, like in California, there's fires are taking off again. Well, they were already making major changes in the cost of materials and the cost of labor, because they're just, everybody's busy. And that's the time when they end up having to pay more for that labor to get good quality people. And when they do that, it drives the prices up. Supply houses say, you know what? Materials are costing us a little more. Now's a good time to regain that extra cost that is coming to us and maybe put a little extra profit to pick up some that we lost when we were out there being so darn competitive. So it's very, very important to realize that because of all these fires, the costs are going up, and we're seeing stuff going up 10, 20, sometimes 30%. Realize that fire damage and smoke damage and water damage are insurance things, and insurance companies pay typically 30% more to get the work done so that they can get the work done. So everything is going up. So you need to be aware of that. You need to keep your bids competitive. If for some reason the contractor comes in, I was $80,000 and he comes in at $85,000, at that point we can show him the bid, show him my bid, and just explain, is there, you know, we like you, we really love you, and we would like to do business with you. Is there any chance you could get closer to this other bid? You're not telling him it's my bid. You're not telling him whose bid it is. You're just saying, can you get closer to it? And then he's got numbers to look at for each line item, and he might look at it and say, you know what? Yeah, I can do this for that and save you $2,000. And over here, I can do that. It's a little lower than I wanted to be, but I can come down $1,000 on that. And all of a sudden, you got it for $82,000 instead of $85,000 or $84,000. So it's just a matter of communicating with that contractor and negotiating a little bit if he's not willing to negotiate, 85 is still a good number in today's, in California anyway, and because of all the fires that are happening. So we're going to take another short break here. If you want to be part of the show, call us at 888-627-6008. Be part of the show. We'll be right back, and we're going to be talking about appraising 203K properties.
We know which lenders are all talk and which ones can actually close your loans faster. You can depend on our consultants for the facts before you choose a lender. There are many lenders who will tell you they need 60 to 90 days to close a renovation loan. Those aren't the ones to choose. A 203K can close as fast as a 203B, unless the lender is trying to play all the possible positions on the field. The 203K is a team sport, and you should have the team members that know what to do. If your LO is constantly calling the consultant to see how is it going, you may want to reevaluate that member. Each member has a job. Let them perform their part while you perform yours. The countdown doesn't start until the lender gets your financial information. Visit 203K911.com. We know what to do.
Welcome back. This is Mike Young. If you want to be part of the show, call us at 888-627-6008. We're always glad to hear from you. We're going to talk a little bit about appraising an FHA property. There's a lot of realtors when I talk at realtor associations, and I did say that correctly, realtor, not realtor, as so many say, even realtors. Some mispronounce it quite often, but appraising. Why do you want to even look at a 203K? There's a lot of people that are out there selling properties that are 203B or just conventional, and they don't have any problem until the appraisal comes in low. Did you know? I personally think every lower income house should be a 203K. A lower priced home because of some of the things that can happen. You can fix that house up. I love it when a realtor, I was doing an appraisal years ago in Oakland, California, and they had a brand new roof on it, but it was scalloped so badly. You could see where the rafters were, and it looked like they were on 48 inch centers. And it sagged so much between them. I thought at first it might have been built that way, but I required a roof inspection. And that realtor went off on me. It was 3 months later when I got a phone call to go reinspect. I thought the deal would die. And when I got there, I was all ready for this realtor to be screaming like he was the last time I walked away from him. And he comes running toward me as I get out of my car, and I'm thinking, oh, shit, excuse my language. But we ended up apologizing. He was so apologetic, and he says, I'm so glad you caught that. Turns out there was 5 layers of roofing on that house. 5 layers of roofing, and the weight was what was causing that scalloping. Look at it now, and I looked, and it was just as straight as could be across the top of that roof. He says, I am so thankful that you caught that, because they said that if any earthquake had happened and my clients were inside of that roof, it probably collapsed and maybe hurt somebody. So, you know, sometimes it's best just to do your job the best you can and let the chips fall where they may. But appraising if the appraisal came in low, or in this case, if that roof, somebody just put a fifth layer of roofing on that. Yes, the shingles were new, but the roof wasn't. The structure wasn't. The structure was an old structure, probably had too much span. They may have put some extra rafters in there. I don't know. It's been a long time ago since that happened. See, I got out of the appraisal business in 2004, so it had to happen before that. Well, anyone can appraise a 203K, right? Any appraiser can appraise a 203K. Well, pretty much. I know in 1994, I got a phone call from Ken Crandall at HUD, and he said, Mike, can you do us a favor and on your own dime, of course, get down there to Alabama and talk to the Appraisal Institute group down there. They're going to get 600 people together across the state, and they need you to talk about 203K. And I said, Ken, I don't have to do that. I'm happy to do that if that's what everybody wants, but I can just talk to them and get this thing straightened out. It's very simple to do a 203K appraisal if you know your scope of work. Okay, and when I talked to the Appraisal Institute people, the rep, and I explained to him that you guys do subject to all the time, do you not? And he says, oh, yeah, we can do a subject to all new windows, or subject to all the broken windows being repaired, subject to a new roof. Yeah, we do that all the time. I said, I know. And that's all a 203K appraisal is you're going to do it subject to all the repairs in the scope of work that the consultant creates. So if I say it's going to have a new concrete driveway and the current driveway is all broken up and just really bad, maybe it's a runner, two concrete strips a foot and a half wide running down the length of the driveway and they're all broken up. No steel was ever in them and they're just, you can't even drive a car on it. It's so uneven. I said, all I'm telling you is that that's going to be gone, and then we're going to put a brand new concrete driveway. We can tell you it's going to be strips just like it was originally, or we can tell you it's, you know, full 8 foot wide and 30 feet long. But whatever it is we tell you, we're going to tell you how much it costs, and we're going to describe just exactly where it fits. And if we're doing a room addition, we're going to give you an appraiser sketch or something like that, or architectural rendering if we have it, and let you know exactly what's going to happen, and you're going to appraise it subject to these things happening. And the guy on the other end of the phone says, this is nothing unique. And I said, I know. And that's why I thought I could do it with a phone call rather than a visit to your wonderful state. I said, I was stationed at Fort McClellan, Alabama for a while when I was in Tigerland there back in the Vietnam era. And the guy was just so thrilled because it was not very difficult and he could explain it to his people just fine. And I said, if you need me, I'll be happy to get on the phone. You can put me on the speaker there and I'll be happy to answer questions. And if anybody has any questions, I gave him my email address. If you got an appraisal questions, just send them over here. We'd be happy to answer individual questions that come up with your group privately. We're not gonna blast them on the phone or blast them on the out to the group there and let them know that anybody was asking these questions, because some of them are quite naive or quite basic. But that's not what we're about. We're about answering the questions. If you have a question, ask it. If you want to ask it privately, we're happy to answer it privately. So not a problem at all. We want to make you look good. We're not here to make you look bad. So appraising. Why would you have a 203B, a standard FHA loan? No fixer-upper. It's not a 203K. But let's say that you had an appraisal come in, and the appraisal, the house sold for $250,000. I mean, that's pretty common price. Even in California, you can still buy a house for $250,000, believe it or not. Not in every neighborhood, but in some. So the price comes in at $200,000. That's where everybody agreed that that's the sales price. Nothing wrong with the house. It doesn't need any work. And all of a sudden, the appraisal comes in at $185,000. The seller says, no, we've already negotiated the price. I am not coming down. The borrower has to come in with more money. Well, if you know, like I do, borrowers are coming in at as low as possible. You know, they're strapped in many cases. So what we do is you can gain 10% by changing it to a FHA 203K. You can gain 10% on the appraised value. Cool. So that could save a deal. And I just realized that we're back up against the clock. So, and anyway, we are happy that you joined us today. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Next week, we're going to be talking a little bit more about appraising. There's two appraisals that are typically required for an FHA 203K. In the meantime, just hang in there. If you got questions, send them to us, email them, call us, tell us your questions, and we'll make sure they get answered on the air next week. And we'll answer you ahead of time when you ask the question, of course. So thank you again for joining us. Look forward to seeing you next time. This is Mike Young, and love my renovation project.
Tune in every Sunday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time to BBS Radio Station 1 and learn more about making home renovations possible, profitable, and hassle-free. Isn't it time you learned how to make money doing something you loved? Visit 203konline.com now and let's get your home makeover projects done right.